Thank you. So I'm going to talk about how to make the infinite finite. What is infinite in this talk is, we've heard about CSP of gamma. In this talk, gamma is infinite. Okay, everything else is as usual. So the input, in particular, is a finite structure, and we ask whether or not there's a homomorphism of the finite structure into gamma. This might look weird to some people. I'm sure that after this talk, you'll be convinced that it's more natural than the finite. Okay, that's the outline of the talk. We have four parts. First part is just a little warm-up with some jokes, and I'll try to explain the first part. This is a big project of classifying the complexity of such of certain infinite CSPs, where we are in that project. Second part will be consist of examples of infinite templates. That's where I'll try to convince you that those are natural problems. I'll introduce homogeneous structures. Third part will be about a method we developed in order to deal with such infinite templates and in order to obtain complexity classifications for infinite CSPs. And the fourth part is summary and outlook. Let's enter the talk. I'm saying this because I gave a talk 3 weeks ago in Leeds, and I used the door in order to symbolize that we're entering the talk. I didn't say anything. I thought it was clear. Afterwards, someone told me, I like the doors. I don't know what they mean, and they confused me, but they look nice. So I'm trying to avoid this kind of situation. Before, I mean, some people have heard of talks of mine before. Before I used to use this one, a curtain, and there were no problems. I don't see why doors are more complicated than curtains. But anyway, let's start. It could also mean welcome to the insane world of Michael Pinsker's talks, maybe. Or for this talk, let's just say it means welcome to the madhouse of infinity. First part. Sorry? It's forbidden, but it's fun. First slide, first real slide, is on the organizer of the workshop. If I was an organizer, I'd be getting nervous by now. So they wrote an email to the speakers before the workshop saying, because most participants are not going to say what they put there, you can assume a basic knowledge of algebra and CSP over a finite set. So, namely, they listed, I shortened the list a little bit, they list in particular PP definitions, polymorphisms, the Galois correspondence, complexity of the CSP just depends on the variety generated by the polymorphism algebra. We can assume that it's idempotent, and dichotomy conjecture. When I read this, I thought, oh, this is nice. I want to have the same for an infinite set. Doesn't work like that. And I'll visualize that. No. Cloning finite sheep. It's the only moment in the talk where the template will be a finite structure. You can draw it like this, right? And now consider the polymorphism clone of the structure. Then I can, since it's a clone, I can also draw it like this because it still has the information of the complexity of the CSP of gamma encoded in it. Okay? So when we pass from gamma to poly gamma, we don't lose that kind of information. Now, let A of poly gamma be the abstraction of poly gamma. By that I mean the variety generated by poly gamma. So just the equations that hold. So we forget about the concrete functions, right? Well, the organizer said we can still draw it like this because this still has that information about the complexity of CSP of gamma encoded in it. So in the finite, we just say, I mean, if there are Taylor terms, then the thing is tractable. If there are no Taylor terms, it's NP complete. I don't see the problem. I mean, you could start proving this. So how about when we want to clone infinite sheep? Let gamma be an infinite structure. I'll draw it the same way. Then for nice gamma, with reasonable assumptions on gamma, which don't disturb us too much, pole of gamma still knows the complexity of the CFP of gamma, okay? I'll give you conditions later for what kind of gamma this holds. So this part is not a problem. Now look at the variety generated by pole of gamma. So we forget about the concrete functions. We just observe the laws that hold between them. And it could look like that. We don't want that. It could look like that. That's me, by the way. So we don't know for the moment if the variety generated by pole of gamma still has knows the complexity of CSP of gamma. But it seems like we have evidence from the classification we obtained in the past that we can do things with equations and varieties. And that, in fact, for a nice class of infinite templates gamma, we can kind of assign to gamma a finite algebra and then say the dichotomy conjecture holds. Then if this finite algebra would be tractable, then the original CSP of the original gamma would be tractable, and same for NP complete. So we're at the moment working on this. This is like the big big goal, if you want. So there will be a talk after mine given by Manuel Podierski. My talk will now concentrate on how to understand pole gamma. It's a method we developed, and which it's the part we understand well. Manuel has the unfortunate task of talking about what we don't know for 1 hour. Much of what we are going to say will be science fiction. In fact, in this project of reducing considerable class of infinite CSPs to the finite, we're really passing through several fields of mathematics involving model theory, in the sense that we have to understand homogeneous structures, things like that. That part, we can get it done. It's okay. Ramsey theory, it's what we did in past years. We used the Ramsey theory in order to analyze polymorphisms on infinite structures, in order to find patterns in them and make them finite objects, use them in algorithms. Ramsey theory is now linked since 2005 by a theorem of Kechis, Pestov, and Todorcevic with topological dynamics, which comes in very handy in proofs, and I will even give you a proof about CSP using topological dynamics. Quite surprising, I would say. Then set theory. If you have a polymorphism cloned and in the infinite, it doesn't just have an algebraic structure, but a topological structure. And it's easier to show, we think to know that the complexity of the CSP of gamma is captured by the abstract clone with its topology. And now it can happen. There are universes of mathematics where actually you can reconstruct the topology of a topological group from the abstract group. And the same might happen for clones, which would be useful for us. So, but as I said, this is science fiction, right? And then universal algebra, of course, and complexity theory. We still have to adapt algorithms to the infinite. So, okay. Might never work out. I mean, there's a lot of question marks on this in this big project. But if it does, I mean, it would be fantastic. I mean, it would be a massive classification, I guess. Okay, let's move to the second part. I'm trying to help you. which is about those infinite CSPs. I mean, is this just some sick fantasy of Michael Pinsker, or is it something useful? Look at the following computational problem. Input is a finite graph, okay? A finite graph where it's real computational problems. Question, is it a cyclic? Okay? You will agree this is a finite problem, right? You want to formulate it as a CSP as a homomorphism problem, you better use an infinite structure. You use as a template, for example, the order of the rationals. Graph is acyclic if and only if it has a homomorphism into that structure. Easy to see. Or input is a finite set of variables and some triples, which I specify among those variables. And the question is, is there a weak linear order, a linear order where I can identify elements, right, on the variables such that for all specified triples, this triple, the middle part, the second element of the triple is between the first and the last one with respect to this order. Can be formulated, it's clearly a finite problem, can be formulated as a CSP, where you use the betweenness relation on the dense linear order. Or given a finite system of equations using plus times constant and equal, is there a solution in the integers? Can be formulated as clearly a finite problem, can be formulated as a homomorphism problem with infinite templates. KN freeness, input is a finite, again, input is always finite. Undirected graph, question, is the graph KN free? Does it not contain a clique of size n? There's an object, infinite object, with nice infinite object with which you can formulate this as a CSP, as a homomorphism problem. So I guess, I mean, those problems, they don't shock you. They don't say those problems are artificial problems. Okay, even more, so I call those problems infinite sheep, right? More infinite sheep nature has been observed some years ago in Klagenfurt on a conference. You can talk to them here. Now, so those were single problems. Now I would like to give you a class of computational problems, an infinity of computational problems, which we can formulate as CSPs with infinite templates. So fix a binary relation symbol and imagine the edge relation of an undirected graph. And let psi be a finite set of quantify-free E formulas, okay? So kind of propositional graph formulas, I would call them. Input is a finite, then psi defines the following computational problem. Input is a finite set of variables and statements about those variables where the statements can only be taken from psi. So you cannot say arbitrary things about the graph you want, but your language is, I mean, the kind of constraints are restricted by the choice of psi, right? Question, is the conjunction of my wishes on those variables satisfiable in a graph? Okay? Finite problem. The complexity clearly depends on psi. The larger psi gets, the more constraints I can put on the variables, the more complicated the problem becomes. But it's always in NP because I can just guess a graph. And verify quickly whether or not the constraints are satisfied. Question, for which psi is this problem tractable? Give you an example, two examples. first example, that psi only contain a formula which says about three variables that there's exactly one edge between them, okay? Turns out that this is easy. If I can only say this about the variables, then it's easy to decide whether or not. It's hard to decide. I mean, who put my talk at 9:30 in the morning? So that's a hard problem. Let's modify the formula a little bit and let psi 2 be the formula that says about three variables, either there's exactly one edge between them or they induce a triangle. Okay? That's an easy problem. Who can see the difference? Well, I mean, why is this one easy? Why is this one the first one difficult? Not so clear. Now let's try this to formulate this problem as an infinite CSP. Okay. For that we take the random graph. It's the unique countably infinite graph which satisfies two properties. First one, it's homogeneous. That is, whenever I have two finite subgraphs of the graph, and I have a partial isomorphism, I have an isomorphism between the two substructures, then I can find an automorphism which witnesses this isomorphism, okay? You can imagine it looks the same everywhere. I mean, in a way. And it's universal. It contains all finite graphs as induced subgraphs, okay? Now, given a graph formula, so a quantifier-free formula in this language of graphs, it defines a relation on the random graph, right? We just put all tuples to the relation that satisfy the formula, okay? And for a set of graph formulas, which defines a computational problem, we define a structure with the same domain as the random graph, and which has the relations defined by those formulas in psi, okay? We call such a structure a reduct of the random graph. From now on, this word will appear often. A reduct of a structure is a structure on the same domain whose relations have a first order definition from the original structure. Okay, they can be written down from defined in the original structure. Okay. Okay, and now observe the following: an instance of graph set has a positive solution. So an instance is the set of variables and statements about the variables taken from psi. It has a positive solution if and only if the existentially quantified conjunction of the statements holds in this reduct. Why is that the case? Basically, it's the case because the random graph contains all finite subgraphs. Okay, so if there's a graph satisfying the constraints, then there's a graph in the random graph which satisfies the constraints, and vice versa. Okay. So graph set of psi and CSP of this reduct are basically one and the same problem. Yeah, because I mean here I use the formulation of CSP of deciding whether or not a primitive positive sentence holds in the structure. Okay. Instead of the random graph, I didn't use the fact that the graph is homogeneous. There. Yeah? Instead of the random graph, we could have used any universal graph, any graph which contains all finite graphs. But in the case of graphs, there's a unique nicest graph, universal graph, and that's the random graph. And it's we need this in order to apply our method, this homogeneity. Okay, so I picked that one for that reason. And so CSP of a reduct of the random graph corresponds to a graph set problem and vice versa. So classifying the complexity of all graph set problems is the same as classifying the CSP of all reducts of the random graph. Okay? So that's an infinite class of computational problems. I'll come back to it later. Compare this with the Boolean satisfiability problem. You have a finite set of propositional formulas. You have then you get the following computational problem. Input is a finite set of propositional variables and constraints about these variables, where all constraints are taken from the set I fixed before. Question, is the conjunction satisfiable? It's always in P, a question for which psi is this problem a hard problem, for which psi is it difficult. For every Boolean formula, every propositional formula, we can define a relation on a two-element domain, just a natural relation defined by that formula. A set of Boolean formulas, we get a structure with Boolean domain, and we get that a Boolean set of psi is just CSP of this structure. So those Boolean set of psi problems are just CSPs of structures on a Boolean domain. So we know when they are tractable and when not. But I just showed you this to draw an analogy to show that this is a very similar problem to the graph problem. Just this one can be formulated as a finite CSP, and the graph problem cannot be formulated as a finite CSP. Temporal constraints. Again, fix a binary relation symbol. So basically we're in the same situation as before, just now we imagine that this symbol denotes a linear order relation. We get the following problem for a set of smaller formulas. Input a set of variable statements about those variables in this language. Question, is this satisfiable not in a graph, but in a linear order? Okay, that's the only difference now with graphs. But same thing, always in NP, we can guess an order. Question, for which size this temp set is tractable. Okay. How to formulate it as an infinite CSP? Take the order of the rationals. For a smaller formula, this, every formula defines a relation on the rational. A set of formulas defines a structure with base set the rational. This structure is a redux because all of its relations are defined in the rational, right? And as before, we see that the original temp set of psi, a finite problem, and the CSP of this infinite structure are one and the same problem. And again, we could have used any linear order which contains all finite orders, so any infinite linear order. But I chose the rationals because they are a homogeneous structure, and we need homogeneous structures. Okay? I could have taken the natural numbers, but from a model theoretic sense, the natural view, the natural numbers are much worse than the rational. Okay? Okay, it turns out that, the first one you know, that all those problems which I defined in the last 10 minutes are either in P or NP complete. Moreover, given the set of formulas, we can decide in which of the two classes the problem falls. First one is just the classification of CSP on the two-element set. Second was done by Podierski and Kara in 2007, and the thing for graphs we did last year. And the thing for graphs, the rationals, they are still a quite special thing. I mean, they're not so complicated. The thing for graphs forced us to develop a method for it, which seems to work in a much more general context. And that's what I'm trying to show you in the following. Let's go back to this. Let's have a look at these homogeneous structures again. Graph set of psi is a problem of the form: is there a finite graph such that constraints in the language of graphs? Temp set of psi is of the form: is there a linear order such that constraints in the language of linear orders. When can I formulate such a problem? For which classes? The class of finite graphs it works, for the class of finite linear orders it works. When does this work? So those classes, the class of finite graphs, graphs of linear orders, they are so-called amalgamation class. That is, whenever I have two such structures, which might have some intersection, then there is a structure in the class which contains all this constellation. Okay. And then there is Frey's theorem. In fact, we're talking about relational structures here. there's a one-to-one correspondence between homogeneous structures and amalgamation classes. Okay? Whenever I have a countable class of structures which is closed under substructures and which has amalgamation, then there is a unique homogeneous structure, it's called the Frise limit of this class, unique structure which is homogeneous and which has this class as its age. The age is the set of finite induced substructures. Okay. So from an amalgamation class, whenever I have an amalgamation class, I can build this kind of nice limit, which we need for our purposes. And conversely, if you have a homogeneous structure, then the its age is an amalgamation class. Does this exist, or where the linear orders and the graphs are already the only problems, only example? Fortunately, not the case. For example, partial orders. Consider the set of finite partial orders. This has amalgamation. Therefore, there's this homogeneous limit, the Frise limit of this class. Therefore, I could formulate a CSP. A computational problem? Is there a partial order such that, and then constraints for this language? This kind of CSP I could formulate as a CSP of a reductor of this random partial order, this limit. Yeah. I know this is a functional signature there, but I know people in this audience like that. The class of distributive lattices is an amalgamation class. The class of trivial lattices is an amalgamation class. This was shown by Day and Ježek. So, good theorem. In fact, they didn't only show that trivial lattices have amalgamation. They showed that those three classes of lattices are the only varieties of lattices that have amalgamation. I mean, if they had only shown that. Metric spaces with rational finite metric spaces with rational distances, tournaments, then Hansen digraphs. So Hansen digraphs. Well, actually, there are lots of homogeneous structures. There are lots of amalgamation classes, and those Hansen digraphs there, they show that the class of homogeneous digraphs is uncountable. Yeah. And in fact, the homogeneous digraphs, they have been classified by Turing in some major work. Okay. So we pass on to part three, which is the method for classifying, for dealing with such structures. Oh, there are two doors. Which one do you want to take? Sorry? I'm afraid there's no such door. Which one? There is no such door either. Okay, left. Oh my God. This was a Russian conference some years ago. Let's go back. Okay. Let's talk about the method. What does it say there? Okay, so we start with a countable homogeneous relational structure like the random graph. I advise you to always imagine the random graph in a finite language, and we call this structure the base structure. Yeah? And from this one, we define reducts and so on. Reduct of the structure is a structure with a first order definition in the original structure. And for our purposes, it makes sense to consider two reducts equivalent if and only if one has a PP definition from the other and vice versa. With quantifiers? Well, it's a homogeneous structure in a finite language. Oh, this made my question freaked me out. No, it's a homogeneous structure in a finite language, therefore it has quantifier elimination. So it doesn't matter. I mean, quantifier free. Okay. So since PP interdefinable CSPs have the same complexity, we use this equivalence relation, right? we order the redux by the relation, gamma one redux is PP definable from the other one. You notice from the final, we factor, this defines a quasi order, and we factor this order by PP interdefined by the PP equivalence and obtain a complete lattice. And basically, what we have to do is to understand the complexity of the CSP of the elements of this lattice. So we have this kind of this problem of understanding all the reducts of the base structure up to PP interdefinability. Okay, how do we do this? We want to use clones, right? So we have to consider one more definition. A clone on an infinite set is called closed if and only if it's n-ary fragment, its set of n-ary functions, is a closed subset in the bare space d to the d to the n. So d stay equipped with the discrete topology, and d to the d to the n has the product topology. That just means that what is the clone called? It's called C. That just means if for all g from some d to the n to d, if for all finite subsets of d to the n, there exists a function in the clone such that which agrees with this with g on this finite set, then G is in the clone. Okay? So the clone is called closed if it contains all functions which can be approximated on all finite subsets. Okay? Now we have the following. If delta is an omega categorical structure, for example, if it's homogeneous in a finite language, that implies that. You don't have to know what omega categorical means. Then the mapping, which maps a reduct to its polymorphism clone, is a one-to-one correspondence between the those equivalence classes with respect to PP interdefinability and the closed clones which contain the automorphism group of the base structure. Therefore, understanding this lattice of reducts up to PP means understanding the lattice of clones contained above the automorphism group of the base structure. Okay. That's a kind of generalization of Rilnachevsky. Okay, that's what I just said. Now, it's not that easy, because already for the empty structure, yeah, which has no relations, therefore for all structures, there's a continuum of reducts up to PP interdefinability. So we will not be able to just take the structure, investigate the clone lattice and draw the clone lattice in the end, be happy and draw a line, NP complete, tractable. It doesn't work like that. So what we have to do is we have to find this border in the lattice. I mean, we can just draw the whole lattice, okay? But in the past, we've succeeded sometimes. And then, Are we in NP actually? I mean, those are infinite structures. It's not clear that the problem of deciding whether or not there's a homomorphism from a given finite finite structure into the template can be even decided, right? I told you already before that there exist those Hansen digraphs, yeah? That there exists a continuum of non-isomorphic homogeneous digraphs. Yeah, it's easy to see that, I mean, they're built from different ages, and it's easy to see that they have different CSPs, okay? Therefore, there exist even homogeneous digraphs which has have an undecidable CSP, okay? So even when we restrict ourselves to homogeneous structures, not arbitrary infinite structures, we have undecidable problems, okay? But that's a natural I mean, why is it decidable for graphs, or why is it decidable for linear order? There's a natural condition that implies this. We call a class of structures finitely bounded if there is a finite set of a class of finite structures. Okay, everything is finite there in this definition. A class of finite structures is finitely bounded if there is a finite set of structures in that language, such that a structure is in the class if and only if none of those elements of the finite set embeds into the structure. We call this set a set of forbidden substructures. So if the class is determined by finitely many forbidden substructures, for example, graphs have this problem, have this property, or linear orders. Just easy to see. Partial orders have this property: lattices, graphs, KN-free graphs. Yeah. And it's not difficult to see that if a homogeneous structure in a finite language is finitely bounded, then it's the CSP of its redux is not only decidable, but it's an NP. And this is, I mean, this finite boundedness, it's a natural condition, but because we want to ask questions of the form, is there a graph such that, or is there a linear order such that, is there a partial order such that, and if there a graph is a thing which I cannot even write down, right? I mean, if this notion, if I replace graph by something that cannot be written down in a finite way, then we cannot expect, it probably doesn't correspond to a natural algorithmic problem, right? So this is not a restriction that would disturb us very much for practical purposes. Okay, so we have settled this. From now on, we consider homogeneous structures in a finite language which are finitely bounded. Still, we know for those structures the complexity of the CSP is encoded in the clone, but still, how can an infinite polymorphism be used in an algorithm in order to show tractability? I mean, how do you use an infinite object? And our approach to this was to use Ramsey theory to make them finite. Okay. Take as an example the random graph. A function on the random graph is called canonical if and only if whenever I have two pairs which have the same type in the random graph. Same type just means they satisfy the same formulas. So what are the possible types in the random graph? There are edges, there are non-edges, there are two elements can be equal. By homogeneity, this is all. Okay. Then also there are the image of those two pairs under F have the same type. Okay? That's called canonical. Examples. Automorphisms or embeddings are canonical because they send a pair of a certain type to a pair of the same type even. Yeah? It preserves types, so in particular the type of the image just depends on the type of the pre-image. Constant functions are canonical. I'm giving this example to show you that it does not at all mean homomorphism. It kind of reminds people of homomorphism, but it's not that. I mean, constant functions, they do this, they're canonical, obviously, because all tuples in the image have the same type, but they're not at all canonical. They destroy everything. Homomorphisms are not necessarily canonical because this condition just talks about condition for being a homomorphism just talks about the relations that are in the language and not about the negations of the relations. Huh? Minus is canonical. What is minus? There are permutations of the random graph which just switch edges and non-edges, okay, which make all edges non-edges. That's obviously canonical because whenever you have two things of the same type, say two edges, then they both become non-edges. Or two non-edges, they both become edges. Yeah. EE and EN are canonical. The random graph contains all countable graphs, in fact, And in particular, it contains a complete infinite click. Yeah. So take an injection that maps the random graph onto this click. Well, then edges become edges and non-edges become edges. So it's canonical. En is the same thing with an independent set. Okay. We want to obtain canonical functions because they can be described in a nice way, like just as I described those functions. Yeah? Just as I described those examples. The class of finite graphs has the following Ramsey property. For all graphs H, it's just a graph. There exists a larger graph S such that whenever I color the edges of S with three colors, then I find a copy of H, a monochromatic copy of H in S. Okay? So I start with a graph of which I want to find a monochromatic copy. Then there exists a large thing, S, such that whenever I color this with three colors, the edges, I will find the this copy of H. Okay? Now, consider any F on the random graph, okay, and color the edges of the random graph according to the type of their image. There are three possibilities, right? Either the edge stays an edge, or it becomes a non-edge, or it collapses to a constant. We can do the same for non-edges, of course. Then, for any finite graph, there exists a copy such that whenever I color and so on, this copy exists in the random graph. Therefore, in particular, for this coloring of this copy, there is a monochromatic copy of the original graph. So I started from any graph, and I found a copy in the random graph of this original graph on which the function is canonical. Right? And I had no assumption on the function. Yeah? So, given any f, we see that it behaves regularly on arbitrarily large finite subgraphs. Okay, this is not good enough, but we're almost there. So, I think you've already understood this, but I put it again. A canonical function is basically just a function from En equality to En equality, from the three two types that exist in a random graph to the two types. Right? So it's a finite object. It's easy to see that the converse doesn't hold. Not every function on those three elements induces a real function on the random graph, but that doesn't disturb us. You cannot, for example, collapse all non-edges and keep the edges. Just try to collapse all non-edges and keep the. Which are for the graph, it's easy because it's finitely bounded. It's exactly here that we want this finitely bounded condition because we see which functions on types correspond to real functions. Okay, but on a random graph, it's easy. So you have this subgraph. If you want to collapse all non-edges, you have to collapse this and this and this and this. Therefore, you have to collapse those two. You cannot keep edges. Okay. So, since there are not so many functions on unary functions on three elements, and some are absurd, we can just list all possibilities of canonical behavior on the random graph. We can turn everything into edges. It's the constant function with value e. Right? Everything into non-edges. It's the corresponds to the constant function with value n. Minus switching edges and non-edges. It's the permutation of 0, 1 in a Boolean domain. Being constant on the graph, so it means mapping everything to equality in the type function, or behaving like an automorphism. That's everything. Okay, behaving like an automorphism means keeping E and N. So it's just the identity, the canonical function. So given any F, we know that one of these behaviors appears for arbitrarily large finite subgraphs, because there are just finitely many behaviors. And we have a limit of an infinite sequence of finite graphs. The problem is, in particular, F generates by topological closure one of these functions. Yeah? Given any F, it generates one of these functions. But that's not a good statement, because the last one is an automorphism. And of course F generates, by generate I mean always with the automorphisms of the base structure. And of course it generates an automorphism. Of course it generates the identity. So that's not a good thing. I mean, it says nothing. So we want to do the same thing. We want to find canonical behavior in an arbitrary F while keeping some information on F. This information can be F is not an automorphism, or it violates a certain relation. Yeah? So consider any F on the random graph and say it violates a relation. I want to find a canonical function which still violates this relation, which is still has some value, which in particular, if I had this relation, imagine a hard relation, I want to show that my CSP is tractable. I take a polymorphism, for the moment we're in the unary, but take a polymorphism which violates this relation. I want to make it nice, I want to make it canonical, and keep the information that it violates this hard relation. Okay? So we fix constants if, for example, it violates R. This is witnessed on a finite set. Yeah? So we fix constants where we see this. Then adding those constants to the language keeps this, Ramsey property. We can still color edges, non-edges, find canonical behavior. Yeah, for the random graph, it's not so difficult to see. And now we consider F not as a function on VE, but as a function from this enriched structure to VE. Again, doing some combinatorics, F is canonical on arbitrarily large finite substructures of this structure. There are just finitely many behaviors. Therefore, we of finitely many canonical behaviors, because there's just finitely many types. And therefore, we can assume that it has the same behavior on arbitrarily large finite substructures. Okay? Therefore, by taking this topological closure there, approximating such a function down there, it generates a function which behaves like the original function on the constants I fixed, and which is canonical as a function from this enriched structure to the random graph. So now we have a thing that is a finite object and which violates the relation. Okay? In the clone. And we replace F by that in order to work with that. Use that in an algorithm. This I can write into an algorithm, right? Using this, for example, one can determine the minimal clones containing the automorphism group of the random graph. Yeah? Just by taking any function which is not an automorphism generates one of those functions of the list. How do I do it? I take any function, I fix constants on which I see that the function is not an automorphism. That is, either it violates an edge or a non-edge, or it's at least, it's not unary, it's not essentially unary. I see this on a finite set, then I make it canonical, and then I do just finite combinatorics. Okay, there are 14 or so minimal clones containing the automorphism group. Okay. In fact, to do this, when we go to higher arities, the argument is more involved than what I said now. We have to extend the random graph by a random dense linear order, by an order of the rationals, which is mixed randomly with the edge relation, but the spirit is like I just explained. Okay, now let's move from the random graph to other homogeneous structures. We fix a signature, and that SHP be structures in the signature. I imagine P as a small structure with H as a medium-sized structure, and S as a large structure. Okay. P, H, and S we already knew from the random graph. P takes the role of the edges before. Before I was coloring edges, and now I color structures of type P. So S arrow HP means for any coloring of the copies of P that was before edges, right? In S, with two colors or three colors, whatever you want, there exists a copy of H in the big structure on which the coloring is constant. Okay? It's the same as for the random graph, just that we, instead of graphs, we say structures, and instead of edges, we say P. We don't just want to color edges, we want to color, well, whatever. I mean, we can, on the class of graphs, we could color triangles, or we could color, yeah. Okay. And a class of structures is called a Ramsey class if, whenever I specify what I want to color and what I want to find, there is a large structure such that whenever I color the what I want to color with three colors, then there's a copy of what I want on which the coloring is constant. Okay?
These are all finite.
Yeah, everything here is finite. This is finite combinatorics. Now let delta be an arbitrary structure. As before, I defined the notion of canonical. A function is canonical if and only if, whenever I take two tuples in the structure which look the same, of the same type, that means they can be moved to one another by an automorphism, okay? The image under F of those tuples has the same type as well, okay? The type of the image just depends on the type of the pre-image. And now, well, arguing as before, if delta is Ramsey, its H is a Ramsey class, yeah, its set of finite induced substructures is a Ramsey class, ordered, it has a linear order, but one can always add an order. Yeah. And the omega categorical, that means there are just finitely many types. We need this in order to know that we are coloring with finitely many colors in the argument. Okay. Omega categorical follows from homogeneous. So we can just write homogeneous right away. Then all finite substructures of delta have a copy in delta on which F is canonical. Therefore, any F, I'm starting with any F on such a structure, it will generate a canonical function. And we have the same problem. This canonical function, I know it generates, can just be the identity or can just be an automorphism, and it's not interesting. It doesn't violate anything. So what we want to do, as before, we want to fix constants in the structure, finitely many, so on which we see that F does something interesting. For example, it violates a relation, a hard relation in CSP, or it's not an automorphism, or it depends on at least two variables, things like that. And generate a canonical function which still has this property, which behaves like the original function on those finitely many constants. Okay. Why don't I just do it? I could just add those constants as before. Well, it's not so obvious that that's actually weird, that if you have a Ramsey structure and you add finitely many constants, that the enriched structures is still Ramsey. Yeah? It's a bit surprising that this is not easy, but it's not easy. Okay, and now I told you that Ramsey theories since 2005, there was a theorem in 2005 that had a big influence in the field, and it characterizes ordered homogeneous structures, those ordered homogeneous structures which have the Ramsey property by the means of its topological group. Yeah? So it says an ordered homogeneous structure has the Ramsey property if and only if whenever its automorphism group acts as a topological group on a compact Hausdorff space, then there's a fixed point. Okay? You don't have to understand why this is true. The paper is long. But it just take it for granted. Okay? It's a cool theorem. Now, it's not so hard to see that every open subgroup of an extremely amenable group is extremely amenable, open in the topology. Yeah. And now the automorphism group of the structure delta, when I add constants, finitely many constants, is an open subgroup. Therefore, if delta was Ramsey, then its group was extremely amenable. Therefore, this open subgroup is extremely amenable. Therefore, by the other direction of the theorem, delta enriched by those constants is Ramsey. Okay? So we can do this. Happy it makes you laugh. Okay. And like that, we can prove if delta is an ordered Ramsey homogeneous finite language structure, and f is any function, k or a function on this structure, and I fix constants, then f generates a function which behaves like the original, which is identical with the original function on those constants, and which is canonical with respect to this enriched language. Okay, and we had a combinatorial proof of this, shifting around things, and but we found a new proof a few days ago, which I have to share with you. Okay, consider all functions, k are functions on the structure which agree with f on those constants. Okay. So I want to find an element of this set which is canonical, right? I factor this set by the following equivalence relation. Two functions are equivalent if and only if when I can apply an automorphism outside, such that it can be equal. Okay. I factor the set by this equivalence relation. Not difficult to show that this is a compact space. Okay, it's basically like the proof that the Cantor space is compact. Okay, it's a compact space. Now let the kth power of the automorphism group of delta enriched by the constants act on this space by sending a class. Okay. So this is an element of the kth power of this automorphism group. I applied to an equivalence class as follows. I just apply the automorphisms inside to the variables and take the class. Okay? It's easy to see that this defines an action, that's well defined, and that it's continuous. Okay? Therefore, by the theorem of Kehl's best of Todorcevic, it has a fixed point. Okay? So the fixed point, because it's an action of an extremely amenable group. Yeah, you need that the product of extremely amenable groups is extremely amenable. It's not difficult, okay? It has a fixed point. Being a fixed point, you can check it at home, or just afterwards, 5 minutes, means that the function is canonical. So any element of a fixed point is canonical. I mean, this is a five lines proof of... And this is, remember, this is to do CSP. Okay. So using this, we get the following. If we have a reduct of a finite language homogeneous ordered Ramsey structure, then every minimal super clone of the polymorphism clone of the reduct is generated by a canonical function. If it has finite language, then I just have to fix, then I have a bound on the constants, I can find an average bound, so there are just finitely many such superclones, all generated by canonical functions, and every closed superclone of the polymorphism clone is contained in such a thing. So what I can do in the clone lattice, I'm at some point in the clone lattice, I can climb it up almost automatically, I mean, in a finitistic way, somehow. Okay? That's the classification for graph set problems, which we obtained basically by this method, just restricted to the random graph, okay? So what we did, we identified certain hard relations. We saw they are hard, we proved hardness for them, and then said, okay, if a reduct does not PP define any of those hard relations, then it violates them by a polymorphism. We made those polymorphisms canonical, did some adapted the algorithms, I mean, those canonical functions are basically functions on finite sets. We adapted the algorithms of the corresponding functions on finite sets and proved tractability for those products, which don't define any of the hard relations. So it can be formulated as follows. If gamma is any reduct of the random graph, then either gamma has 1 out of 17 canonical polymorphisms and the CSP is tractable, or it's NP-complete. On the relational side, if gamma is a redux of the random graph, then either it PP defines 1 out of 4 hard relations and it's NP-complete or it's tractable. Okay? That's the two sides of the Galois connection. Okay. You might wonder what those 17 canonical polymorphisms look like. They didn't fit on the slide, so I just left it like that. If anyone wants to know number 11 to 17, just ask me. But I'm showing this in order to show you that you might recognize some things. I mean, there's some max, min, majority, minority. That's just the max on a two-element set on EN, right? And it's just majority on minority on EN. So those algorithms, they were basically adaptions of the algorithms for semi-lattice majority to the infinite, okay? I mean, to this situation, to this, okay? And from this, you also get given a finite set of graphs formulas, the problem whether or not it's in P is decidable, because you can just check with those polymorphisms, which are finite objects, whether or not they are there. Okay. What we can do? We can climb up to the clone lattice of such structures. We can violate hard relations canonically. We can decide PP definability. That's like the peak of this method, I would say. We cannot draw the whole lattice, but we can decide whether or not one reduct PP defines the other one. So given a base structure which is ordered Ramsey, homogeneous, finite language, finitely bounded, then the problem of whether or not one reduct is PP definable in the other one is decidable. It follows from this method. Okay? What we can't do, or what is the future of this science fiction thing? There are many open problems. I cannot pose all of them, but they can be classified. So this is the first class. Generalize, we have a method that works for a certain setting. It works for ordered Ramsey homogeneous finite language finitely bounded. Is every structure which is homogeneous, and we have a class where we want it to work, which is basically the class of homogeneous structures in a finite language which are finitely bounded. Does this method actually work for that class? And it would work if we could prove that any structure with those many properties is itself a reduct of a homogeneous structure, finitely bounded, finite language. Okay, this is an open problem. Yes, I mean it's model theory. Okay, generalize the setting of the method. Second kind of thing one can do is apply the method. I mean we have a method which helped us classifying graph set problems. You can do the same thing for the random partial order. I mean there will be some work, but basically the tools are there. Yeah? So classify the CSPs of reducts of your favorite nice homogeneous structure. Okay. Third kind of problem is develop the method and show. I mean we have the impression that the complexity does only depend on actually those finite on the equation satisfied in those finite algebras we assign to the structures. But we can there are gaps. So and Manu will talk about this thing. Okay.